When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Want an easy way to stay up to date with the latest news and trends in the NBA? Listen to the NBA Daily Ding podcast Monday through Friday. Wake up and turn up the NBA Daily Ding to stay informed on all things NBA here at The Athletic and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to The Athletic NBA Show,
Monday through Friday
on The Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to Tampering.
We're this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
With Sam Panic.
To be able to bring people together.
What do, baby?
Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to executives in the league is
stop talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
The charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Was it right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Kind of awkward to even talk about it. I can't even mention teams anymore.
Ask me what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
You try all you want with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not rocket science.
I have tampered with the guys.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what happened. I'm just telling you what happened.
Hello and welcome to the Tampering Podcast, the late evening episode debut. I don't think we've ever gone this late. We're going playoff style. I am Sam Amick, national writer at The Athletic. Here as always with Anthony Slater, Fred Katz. We just got done watching Suns Nuggets and the Nets take out some team that previously was called the Bucks. I don't know who that squad was that they beat. Gentlemen, what's going on, boys?
That was the Bucks from the bubble. You didn't recognize them?
My goodness. Just like them. I should know. I got a front row seat in the bubble. That was against Miami. And my all of a sudden, no James Harden, no problem for the Nets. I mean, let's start there, guys. We're doing the fun part about going late night is that for obvious reasons, we want to make sure we can react to the latest news. First of all, it's just fantastic to see both your faces because I've obviously been out for a minute. Took a kind of a poorly timed little getaway to Hawaii that I thought was going to be pre-playoffs, but Adam Silver changed the NBA schedule, and so now I'm back in the game. So good to be with you guys. Thank you very much for filling in last week on tampering. But what do we think of the night's events? We had some good action, but pretty one-sided.
I mean, this is the Nets thing to win. I'm not talking the Bucks series. Obviously, the Bucks series is the Nets to win. This entire playoffs is the Nets to win at this point. I mean, coming out without James Harden and putting out a performance like that where they just destroyed the Bucks. Their offense was so free-flowing. Kevin Durant is playing like the Kevin Durant we're all familiar with. And their role players are just so good. I mean, I think what's amazing about the Nets, I guess it's technically year two of this team, but Kyrie was hurt for most of last year. KD obviously missed the whole season, so it feels like year one. And normally in year one with all these guys together, and obviously they get Harden in the middle of this year, normally year one is the year without the role players. You know, the 2011 Heat, that was the year where it was the big three, and you know, you could have a debate over who their fourth best guy was. And that first year of basically every other super team that comes together, it's where are the role players. And then you look at them going up against Milwaukee tonight, and it's like Joe Harris is as good of a guy in that catch and shoot role as there is in the entire league right now. Bruce Brown is huge for them. I mean, he is so important for them, not just as a defender, but as a screener and just a general activity guy. I mean, they have so many important role players who are stepping up for them in those moments. And when Kevin Durant is just rolling and they don't even have to have Harden and the role players are going like that, it's like, man, what can you possibly do about that team?
You know, it's crazy. Who'd they give the most money to out of the role? I mean, Joe Harris has the biggest contract out of the role guys, but remember how much they wanted to get DeAndre Jordan in there? What did they give him? 4 for $40 just to slide him in? Did Kyrie and KD take like small pay cuts to make that happen? I think they might have. He's not even playing.
DNP'd, yeah.
But you're right about the role guys, and Blake Griffin deserves, you know, an early mention in this. Yeah. I think he's been good defensively in this series. He's had a couple of those.
Feisty too, man.
Yeah, yeah. A few of those dunks. He fits kind of a flowing style. You know, he's passing. He's in that dunker spot. Well, he's kind of cutting through there. And, like, that's, you know, the buyout pickup of the season for sure. And most of the other buyout, remember how much people, like, you know, the buyouts aren't going to matter in the playoffs. Right. And mostly they haven't, but he really has.
Can I give a quick shout out to friend and colleague Jared Greenberg of TNT, which fittingly, I'm rocking the old TNT Inside Story sweatshirt as we speak. So in the bubble, Jared had a very memorable interview with Jamal Murray that you guys remember that, you know, I thought kind of took his profile to a new level as a post-game interview guy. I was laughing in a good way tonight as he talked to KD after the game and asked Kevin, you know, he said it's about, a day from the two-year anniversary of you having the calf injury that led to, you know, a terrible road injury-wise. Did you ever imagine yourself getting back to this kind of a level? To which Kevin, fairly in kind of an edgy way, said, is that a real question? And I thought Jared handled it really well, where he kind of laughed at himself and was kind of like, well, eventually, you know, I'll ask a good question here at some point. But, you know, he gave Kevin a little love and said, it's very impressive. People didn't necessarily think that you would get here. And he did the same thing with Blake the other night, where he tried to say to Blake, you know, people said you were washed. And the Nets, though, you know, even if they might not want to speak on it, they do have these impressive comeback tales. And these guys who, even Kyrie, with everything that happened in Boston and the way that things went down last season, this group, again, like you said, Fred, without James Harden, we don't know when James is coming back. It might be quite some time. And they look fully capable of winning the entire thing.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the most impressive thing that Steve Nash has done this year is just get guys to buy in. I think it can be hard sometimes. I mean, this sounds ridiculous on its face because you'd rather play with better players than worse players, but it can be hard sometimes for role players to learn on the run, especially when guys are rotating in and out the way the Nets stars did this year. It can be hard for role players to figure out, all right, here's my place. Here's my role. Here's what I'm supposed to do. I'm going to do the stuff I'm really good at, and here are the spots on the court I'm going to do it. Here are the times I'm going to do it. And the Nets aren't necessarily going out there and running all these set plays and all that stuff. And they have a lot of improvisation, especially in their offense. And look, it's going to be pretty easy to score when you have Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving on the floor. But it just it looks good. And those guys have bought into their roles and they're performing in them really well. I mean, Slater, you mentioned Blake. And Blake has been so scrappy for these first two games. I mean, like, he's like doing a Pete Rose impression over the first two games. It's just,
they're sending in Giannis's brother to kind of try to mix it up with them. It's kind of been a fun part of the series.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we could continue on this path of their role players, but think about it. Who is supposed to be their best non-star? Dinwiddie, torn ACL, out for the season. Caris LeVert and Jared Allen was their two next best players coming into the season, traded away for a guy, Harden, who obviously would help him if he's healthy, but he's played 43 seconds in the series. And then I mentioned the DeAndre Jordan situation. Like, basically, coming into the season, who we would have presumed would be four of their five best role players, along with Joe Harris, are not in this series yet. They're doing what they're doing. I'm still a little bit concerned just about the Harden injury. I mean, he missed 21 games in the regular season with the hamstring. That doesn't seem like it's necessarily a day-to-day, maybe more a week-to-week type thing. But at this point, I don't know how you can say you're concerned at all about them in this series, which just was probably supposed to be their toughest series, especially with the way Philly's looking with Embiid. And I would flip it. Like, to me, the biggest story of the night is Milwaukee.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's go to the Bucks a little bit. I mean, what? I don't know how else to say it. Just what in the hell? The way they took care of Miami, where everybody lauded them with good reason for not ducking the heat, considering what happened in the playoffs last year, they took kind of the tough guy approach and they got that job done only to do this. And only, you know, game one, the big three was bad. And really, I mean, you're talking Drew Holiday and Chris Middleton had really bad nights tonight. I mean, 86 points, missing threes again. I don't know what to make of it. But, you know, I mean, Mike Budenholzer, as we wrote a couple weeks back, about a month, you know, enters this postseason with a lot of pressure on him. And my goodness, it has gotten ramped up really quickly here.
Well, I mean, you look at Giannis first, right? I don't think he's being deployed correctly. I don't know how many times I have to see him at the top of the key. Like, he's trying to get into a dribble package. His four guys are just standing there, and you're like, wasn't this season about, like, using him as the role man, having a guy in a dunker spot, all this different stuff to activate Giannis? The fact that they got Jrue Holiday to, you know, run pick and rolls with Jrue Holiday, where Jrue Holiday is the ball handler, stuff that fits Giannis better. It almost seemed like maybe he wanted to come into the series like proven, no, I can like go toe to toe as like this star wing against KD. He's not KD. You know, if he's going to shoot 19 footers to KD's 19 footers all series, I think we all know, you know, who's going to win that efficiency battle. So I think it's strange how they're playing. And I don't know if you're looking at Budenholzer more or Giannis himself more, but what has he been? A distant third is like the third best player in the series behind Kyrie and KD. I mean,
and they got to go, I mean, they got to go Giannis at the five more in game three, right?
Are you telling them to bench Brooke Lopez? Is that what you're saying? Is that what you're advocating right now?
They pulverized.
I'm literally choking. I can't believe this is happening.
They destroyed.
Because Brooke Lopez is choking. That's what's happening.
Destroyed the Brooke Lopez drop coverage. Just wrecked it. Milwaukee did a horrible job guarding that, and Brooklyn looked like they were getting whatever they wanted against that coverage throughout the game. And Milwaukee going with size worked for the first half of game one, and then it kind of all fell apart. And I feel like if you put Giannis lineups with Giannis at the five, I don't know, you can play PJ Tucker and Giannis as your two bigs. You can decide which one's the five. But if you play those lineups with those as your two bigs, you know, it can solve some of those problems. You can play a different defensive strategy. You can turn Giannis into your role man more if he's your five. I mean, I feel like it addresses not all the problems. They have other problems, obviously. They were down 900 points at one point, I think. I'm with you. I feel like Giannis playing a position down has got to happen. It's got to.
And just stop putting the ball in his hands like he's a point guard that's going to be like, he's not Luka, he's not KD, he's not Kyrie, he's not that type of star. And for Milwaukee to like try to force feed him into being this like ball control star, like he's just not that.
Slater, a little bit of a pivot here, but I think about all the years you and I were covering Cavs Warriors in the finals and the previous era of the league where you knew unofficially going into the first round, second round conference finals who was coming out. I got to admit, this is a new landscape that I'm taking. It's taking a minute for me to get used to, like, consequences.
Particularly in the West.
Yeah, like, and it's both sides, though. Okay, Brooklyn's dominant. I get it. But Milwaukee was for real up until this point, and Philly was for real up until this point. But you now, like, my goodness, you have consequences in the first round with teams falling short. You know, Portland loses when they should have taken out Denver because of the injuries. Terry Stotts loses his job. You know, now you have, so the Clippers survive Dallas. You know, but now they're going to face a tough Utah team. And the parity is something where, you know, if you look at the Bucks, you know, you're going to have a ripple effect here if they fall short. That's not what we're used to. And it's all across the board.
Well, I'm just curious what the ripple effect in Milwaukee is. I mean, you've committed to Holiday. You got to pay him long term. Middleton's locked in. I mean, maybe he's the trade piece. He's having a very bad series. We haven't
I'm focused on the coach. I mean, I think there could be a coaching change.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I mean, that's obvious. Yeah. I mean, that almost seems like the guarantee if it goes down this path.
Right.
Maybe if it was like a 6-7 game war in the series, but, you know, and they have a chance to salvage this in Milwaukee. Harden's probably still not playing, but yeah, it's as far, and you're talking landscape overall. I think it's been fun, particularly in the West.
Yeah.
Suns Nuggets. We haven't even seen Clippers Jazz yet, but for that to be the other second round series.
Well, Sam, let me ask you. Yeah, sorry, Slater. Sam, let me ask you, what kind of coach? I don't know. I don't know if you have names in mind or anything like that. But what kind of coach, from an attribute standpoint, do you think would have more success with this roster?
Oh, I mean, I'm going to dodge that question because it's not from a reporting standpoint. I don't have to answer that. I'm simply reflecting the fact that, like, the mood around. Here's the thing with Mike entering the postseason. I think it's just my opinion that if the bubble last year didn't include some unique elements and all the stuff that everybody kind of lived through together, you know, the fact that the Bucks were at the center of the social justice front because of the Jacob Blake shooting in Wisconsin, which I think understandably within the Bucks created a reaction where they said, listen, our team was not entirely focused with good reason, that I think some of that stuff, you know, kind of, you know, created an environment where Bud got another shot. And I do wonder if that would have been the case otherwise. But I think the narrative that's out there publicly is one that has grown internally about lack of adjustments and the way that Giannis gets used and things of that nature. And I, so I don't know who the answer is. I just know that frustration was pretty high going in.
Mike D'Antoni? I don't know. Do some creative stuff offensively.
Listen, the optics around Mike are great right now, because the one thing no one's talking much about or writing much about is that, with all due respect, which is all, you know what's coming next when people say that, like to Steve Nash, you know, people you talk to within the league and who are really watching this stuff, like the Nets are a Mike D'Antoni team. And so, yeah, like I think his pedigree is still at a high level because of what the Nets are doing. So I could see something like that. I don't know specifically who they might be looking at, but yeah, that kind of creativity would make some sense. Fred, do you have any thoughts to your own question?
No, I think
he's just trying to pin you down. He wanted to get you on the back. He wanted to get you aggregated.
I was just trying to get you fired.
Right.
That's all. Nice. Not aggregated. I'm a step beyond. I'm just trying to create feuds. No, I mean, I think Bud is a very good coach. I think if you're going to argue that something needs to be shaken up, then it's about adjustments throughout a playoff series, which they did throughout the regular season. They pre-adjusted everything. Yeah. It's not like Bud stubbornly wouldn't change a thing. So I don't know. I think it's going to be a really interesting test from a coaching perspective to see what Bud comes back with in game three, because clearly after those first two games, a few things have to be changed. And he has been more willing and more loosey-goosey with stuff over the last, 10 months. So I'm curious to see what he does over these next 2 to 6 games or 2 to 5 games or whatever it is, before saying exactly what it would be.
Listen, it never ceases to amaze me how the formula for every single team is not all that complicated. You guys know the deal. When any squad falls short of expectations, that, you know, the heat is either falling on the front office, the coaching staff, or the roster. If you got moves you can make that are readily attainable, then maybe you go that route player-wise. You know, if you look at the Clippers, for example, they already did the coaching change. They're not going to change the core of the roster. They certainly are expecting Kawhi Leonard to re-sign in free agency. So the roster, for the most part, is not kind of capable of having any big moves. Well, then the heat was expected to fall on the front office if they fell to Dallas. I think it was going to be pretty intense, and maybe still could be if they fall short in the second round. But every team faces that same equation. And in Milwaukee, it's the same thing. They you know, the front office, I think in their opinion, did its job. It's a little bit like Neil O'Shea, which I don't know that I agree with him, but in Portland
today.
How
about those quotes?
Yeah, there's some strong quotes today where Neil made it clear that he feels like that roster is, you know, not the problem. And I'm sure Terry Stotts didn't enjoy that press conference, but that's the formula. That's it. You can only change so many things. And the Bucks went out and got Drew Holiday. They went out, and that's a guy that Giannis wanted. That's a guy that John Horst went and got. And so, you know, it's not going to be the roster for them. It's not going to be the front office. And I think it's going to be the coaching staff if this keeps, you know, going down this road.
There's also the unfortunate context of all this, which is that, like, I feel like the Bucks could, after the way they just demolished Miami, let's say the Nets just roll through everybody. Let's say they've got either, whether it's Philly or Atlanta next round, they just destroy them in the conference finals. And then whether it's Utah or Phoenix or whomever in the finals, and they just win it in 5 and they just wreck everybody on the way to the title. Like, the Bucks could easily come away from this season with a feeling of, damn, we just were stuck with the Nets in the second round. It doesn't matter what round you play the Nets, you're coming away from it. And I realize that's not the vibe now after watching them play. I mean, that's very clearly, we've talked about all their flaws. We get
no
that.
Harden, though. No Harden, yeah. And down 40. I mean, like, they can recover and make this a series and maybe lose it. But, like,
this is a loss that gets you fired in the regular season. You know what I mean? And nobody fires coaches in the middle of the playoffs, but this is a loss that gets you fired in the regular season. It really is. You know,
can you imagine if Giannis didn't sign the Supermax and this was going on? And that is one way.
And again, that though, Slater, that's why front office doesn't face the
saying, hey, look, we had him ink that. Takes away some of the pressure, I guess. Or maybe it doesn't in this, you know, kind of day and age.
Right.
Where he's trade eligible, I think, the year after he signs the extension. So
right, right.
Suns Nuggets, anybody? I mean, I'm covering the series. I'm going to talk a little Suns Nuggets. I thought it was a fun game.
We've talked before. We always walk that line. No, none of us root for anybody. You can root for humans. And so I wrote about Chris Paul a little while ago, and it's just good to see him healthy, you know, or at least feeling better. And him out there doing his thing, hitting big shots and being a difference maker. I know it's game one. It's only one game, but they look like a squad, you know, that maybe does deserve that you know, kind of West favorite status that I think, you know.
Ooh.
I mean, really, they look dangerous. Denver's a good
squad.
He's
taking shots at the Clippers again, Fred.
I'm not a believer. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Fred.
No, I mean, I don't necessarily have a problem with that statement. They look great. I mean, Slater's guy, Devin Booker, has just been so good.
And who's the best player on the Suns, Fred Katz?
It's Chris Paul had the best year, but right now, Devin Booker. Hey, I put my money where my mouth is. I put Chris Paul second team all NBA. So right now, Devin Booker is playing like the best player on the Suns. And
I apologize for interrupting, Fred. Did you guys catch Kenny Smith and going at Chuck a little bit on TNT about the Devin Booker, Chris debate? Did you guys catch any of this?
No, I didn't.
It was pretty. Chuck's fantastic, but I do love when Kenny in particular will keep receipts on what Chuck said previously and then hold him accountable. So Chuck had Chris as the regular season MVP and then proceeded to say after this game that, or I think at halftime, that, you know, that Devin was the MVP of the Suns, to which Kenny was like, wait a minute, how is Devin the MVP of the Suns, but Chris is the MVP of the league? So, you know, we're not the only ones that are struggling with this existential question.
No, Booker is playing like the best player on the Suns right now. He's playing incredible basketball. He was great in that first round series. It's not just, I mean, Booker and CP and kind of Ayton get all the love though, but Bridges was incredible tonight. Yeah. Yeah. And he wasn't
that good in the Lakers series either. This was kind of his bust out night.
Yeah, for sure. And he was so important for them throughout the year, though. I mean, he's the linchpin of that defense, which allows them to do so much of the stuff they do. They're so communicative defensively, which I thought really helped them defending Jokic tonight. They do something really well, which Slater, you've seen about a million and one times covering the Warriors, which is they do a triple switch, which is after they switch onto Jokic on pick and rolls. When he's off the pick and roll, they switch their guys back. So they get the big man back onto Jokic. And they were doing that throughout the game tonight. They've done that throughout this year a little bit. It takes a really high level communication in order to be able to do that. I just think Monty Williams has those guys playing unbelievable team basketball right now, and it is really showing. And Denver, meanwhile, just, you know, doesn't have the firepower to match it.
Yeah, there's a lot of stability. Their five-man starting lineup led the NBA in minutes this season. They were healthy pretty much the entire season. I think they put like 750, and I think there's only like four lineups in the league that played more than 400 or 500 together. And there's five good defenders. You know, you mentioned communicative out there. They're just, even when, you know, a Bridges gets or a Booker gets switched on to Jokic, it's not, you know, it's a mismatch, but it's not a normal Jokic mismatch. It's certainly not the mismatches he could pick out in against Portland and go, you know, which one of you do I want to score on right now? They're just sturdy. Obviously, Jay Crowder's out there. He's not shooting it that well in the playoffs, but he's just a good guy to have out there. There's a reason he was in the finals with Miami. When you look at this series specifically, backcourt is just such a massive problem. I mean, it's Campazzo and Austin Rivers against Paul and Booker, and then, you know, the wings I would say tilt a little Denver's way, you know, with Gordon Porter against Bridges and Crowder. But if to me, what I'm writing tonight and what will probably be on the site by the time you're reading it is just like Ayton played Jokic to a draw, essentially, and Ayton just was the best big man in a series against the Lakers, which obviously had a hobbled AD, but DeAndre Ayton has like been, it looks like a top 10 big in the league suddenly, and that completely changes everything.
This sounds a little hot takey, but there's truth in it. I mean, who would you have believed if I told you that DeAndre Ayton and Trae Young were going to get their team to the second round before Luka Doncic? You know what
that
I mean?
That is a take.
What? Yeah.
I know that's
take
technically,
it a step further, Sam. Take it a step further.
I know that's not technically a take, but that is
just
a take.
Just stated a fact.
Yeah, Fred. But that's a take. That's when a fact is a take.
Facts.
Yeah, say it. Say it.
Facts.
Say what the implication is.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, again, DeAndre Ayton didn't exactly take
if
the
only
Suns
Marvin
to the
Bagley
second
would
round.
Have, you know, never mind.
Yeah. Well, next season, Marvin Bagley right. to the second round.
No, but Ayton in particular, you know, if you hit the rewind button a little bit, you know, he has the performance enhancing slip up, loses a lot of games as a rookie. The narrative around him, I think it's soiled a bit from there because of it. And then people are barely paying attention to the Suns, you know, and then late last season, I don't know why I'm drawing a blank. Was he healthy at the end of their stretch at the bubble there?
In the bubble? Yeah, he played really well for them in the bubble.
So, but, you know, there was no hype or buzz around DeAndre until he really started doing things this year. And you know, to go from that to your point, Slater, I mean, having it be a wash between he and the soon-to-be MVP is something else. And it does show, I think, how dangerous they're going to be from here on out if it ends up being – you know, an Ayton versus Gobert situation, you know, or whatever they might be facing if they can get through this.
He's just not a mismatch at all. I mean, to be honest, like Denver needs to not ISO post Jokic against him at all. They need to try to get switches. They do some pick and pops. Ayton was a little slow to get out to a few threes. And, you know, if he gets kind of lost in some traffic, he could be scored on. But I think every Denver possession that the last 10 seconds are Nikola Jokic with a cleared floor going against DeAndre Ayton is a bad possession. Even if, you know, there were a couple tonight where Jokic kind of flung in, you know, those fadeaway like 19 footers that look so awkward, but go in. It's just, he's really strong, sturdy, agile. And he's starting to do smarter stuff defensively. I saw tonight, I actually posted on Twitter, but there was this one play where they had a switch up and it looked like it was going to get Jokic a three, and Bridges was kind of like lost and turning around, and Ayton shoves him out to Jokic to stop that three. And then so Jokic swings it over to Campazzo in the corner, who, by the way, is a worse three-point shooter. So even if you give up that shot, that's already a good play by Ayton. But then he closes out on that and forces what was a pretty obvious miss. And it was like, geez, you know, and I'm covering the Warriors where I'm seeing a year one center in James Wiseman who looked lost this season. And you talk to a lot of people like, DeAndre Ayton was lost defensively mm-hmm. as a rookie. And he's like good defensively right now. Yeah, I wouldn't, you know, Monty Williams calls him the anchor of their defense. I'm not sure I'd go there. They have so many good defenders beyond that. But, I mean, he was the center of the six-ranked defense that just
shut the Lakers down. I
feel
like that's more of an old-school center reference.
Yeah, shut the Lakers down in the first round, by the way. I mean, the Lakers offense, I think, had like a 102 rating in that series and then was good again tonight against a Nikola Jokic offense.
And you know what's crazy about Ayton? Normally, I mean, he's improved so much in the last 2 years. And normally when you see a young center progress to that degree, it's almost always the same type of guy. It's almost always the guy who was young, athletic, and a shot blocker, and he chased blocks and maybe chased rebounds, and he got caught out of position because of it, so he wasn't a good defender, and he gave up lots of easy buckets because of it, or he fouled too much. And then he honed that in, and then maybe the blocks even went down a little bit, and all of a sudden he started using his athleticism and his powers for good. And with Ayton, it wasn't that. It was just that he had no idea where to be ever. And now you watch him play, and it's only 2 years ago, and he's yeah, you're right. Like, he's good. He's a good defender. It's just kind of amazing how much he's genuinely improved over the last 2 years. Like it's pretty incredible that a guy at really one, arguably the hardest defensive position in the league at only 22 years old can have improved this much in 2 years. It's credit to him.
Listen, even 5 months ago, and just from a mood standpoint, I remember listening to Chris Paul talk about DeAndre. So at this time, the Suns start out 8-8. They don't look, you know, all that good. And you could tell, because I've been listening to Chris Paul analyze his own teammates for a very long time, you could tell when Chris talked about DeAndre that it was just like, young fella's got a long way to go. And he was sending different, you know, not so subtle messages in the media about the, just the way DeAndre was competing and that some of the stuff you're talking about. And now, you know, like we said, he's battling the best big in the league.
Yeah. And Phoenix has, if they're willing to pay and keep paying, like they have a chance to keep a really good young core together for the next, what, half decade,
well,
at least.
Pay, I mean, with eight, a capital eight. P, cap, all caps, with Chris Paul coming
yes,
up.
Yes. It well, not only Chris Paul is coming up, guess who's extension eligible this summer? Oh, we're just talking about
that's
him.
That's easy. I mean, that's the no-brainer, but yeah.
Well, if I would have asked you 2 weeks ago before he'd ever played a playoff game, I said, DeAndre Ayton, would you give him the max? You'd be like,
yeah,
you know, now yeah. It's like he's kind of played himself into the backs, which, you know, is very good for Phoenix in the sense of like, man, he really looks like a rising top 10 center. Yeah. But that's a lot of money for him.
I hope Mr. Sarver is still doing okay financially these days.
There you go. He's turned the franchise around. I mean, I don't know what he has, but the James Jones hire has been good. Monty Williams, I voted Monty Williams coach of the year. He had the most first place votes.
Yeah, before we move on, because let's jump in a minute. So coming up on the day the pod comes out, we got Hawks, Sixers, and Clippers Jazz. So we'll get into that here in a second. But I do think it's worth, you know, bemoaning for a moment. And who knows, maybe we're not all three on the same page. I did have Monty winning. Was surprised to see the news that Tom Thibodeau won Coach of the Year. And again, it's, you know, with all due respect type thing, everybody's got their vote, but I was surprised by that. It's hard to not feel like we got a little bit of East Coast media bias going on there, but Monty did.
Fred's our East Coast bias.
I voted for Tibbs.
Did you?
Yes, I knew he'd say.
There it is.
Oh, I had Monty on the ballot. He did a phenomenal job this year, but I voted for Tibbs.
There you go.
It's that Knicks.
Honestly, I think if one juice. Vote by the... You know how, did you see how close it was in like the point tally?
Yeah.
I think if one or two votes flip, you know, we're talking about Monty Williams being a coach of the year.
It's
so it really
basically
is Fred.
Your
you
fault,
blame
Fred.
It's, you know what? I'm fine with that. I stand by the decision. Look, Coach of the Year is a ridiculous thing
guy
to vote
couldn't
on.
Even get out of the first round. What the heck?
We know.
Just like Luka Doncic.
Yeah, exactly. We know like 15% of
like,
the value
I gave
that
in my tips
from
voice.
The outside. Yeah, we don't know the distinct value that each individual coach is doing. Quinn Snyder, every coach who received
I don't totally agree
coach
with that.
Year,
I'm gonna be honest
job.
With you. I don't totally agree. At least from a tactical standpoint, it's hard to know. I do feel like, you know, and we've talked a lot about this on the pod. We've talked about Monty and the relationship dynamics. You know that James Jones hiring him leads. You know, and Devin believing in him. You know, then you have Chris deciding to come. I mean, those things don't happen without Monty there. You know, with Tibbs, it's been fantastic. I just don't necessarily see the foundation and the pathway for a longer road than I do with Phoenix. I think it's a little more somewhat potentially short-term transactional. We'll see if Julius can repeat what he did last year. So, I mean, listen, Tibbs was great, but I was pretty stunned to see that award go his way.
I have no argument against Monty. He was great this year. I have no problem with that vote. He did an incredible job. Tibbs, I thought had less to work with, and essentially my tiebreaker for this was that Tibbs coached the team to exceed my personal expectations. I thought the Knicks exceeded my personal expectations for them way more. Then the Suns exceeded theirs. And if you go through the Knicks roster, it's like every one of those guys had a tremendous turnaround.
Where'd you have the Suns in the West preseason?
In the playoffs, like bottom of the playoffs. I don't remember. Maybe seventh, eighth,
yeah,
something like that.
I mean, I would argue thinking a team, and I remember preseason, I said the Suns were a play-in team. I thought they were going to be in that 7-10. For them to be the two, and not only the two, they were like battling for the one into the last week, almost were the top seed in the West, to me is more impressive than the Knicks, like, you know, muscling into that 4 or 5. Don't get me wrong. You know,
listen, people's minds are blown that the Knicks not only made the playoffs, but you know, made their way up the standings. And I do think it's not necessarily this simple, but come on, we just published an entire spectacular podcast called Shattered. Shout out Mike Smelt. Great work on that. All right, let's spin it forward, gentlemen. I wrote a bit today about the team in the ATL and just nothing really groundbreaking at all, but I wanted to take a minute to look at them from 30,000 feet and remind people about how impressive and somewhat, I mean, it's not unprecedented. I don't know where who the comps are, but like, this is not a normal in-season turnaround. And I felt like everybody was a little uncomfortable hitting the rewind button and talking about how, you know, as much as Lloyd Pierce has wide respect all around the coaching industry and is a guy that is generally very well liked, you know, that team in terms of just, this is pro sports, it's results-based. They were 14-20 when Lloyd got fired, 22nd in the league standings-wise, and, you know, defensively awful, fourth quarter awful on both ends of the floor, and 27-11 under Nate McMillan, and this is just regular season only, and tied for third during that span. The fourth quarter turnaround was pretty remarkable. One of the best defenses in the league in the fourth quarter, and mostly the same cast. There were some injury things that you know, played a part. Bogdanović was healthier under McMillan, but in general, Nate has worked wonders with this squad. They knock out the Knicks, and then to see them take Philly out and barely hang on, obviously, at the end of game one was something I did not expect to see. This is just not a story that anybody saw coming.
Makes their off season look a lot better.
Yeah.
You know, Gallinari's kind of found what he should be later in his career. You know, the Rondo deal I didn't like, but they actually got an asset out of the Rondo deal, plus Lou Williams, who, you know, he hasn't been a huge help, but he's there.
But
you know,
Slater, they have this deep roster of
Bogdanović.
Lou Williams is the big one. Who might give it to you one out of three games, they'll give you a moment. But they are momentum moments, and the depth is, at least the last couple of weeks, is a difference maker.
Remind me of the Capella deal. Can we remember the full terms? But like, that is like Schlenk's like probably primo move.
Well, before I cheat and look up the pieces, I will give the backdrop of my favorite part of that, which is that, now, do I think that Schlenk and the Hawks liked Capella independently as a player and thought he could be a big part of their program? Yes, I do. But they also knew that John Collins, who's going to be a restricted free agent this summer, wanted big time money. And around the league, there was a real strong sense that, you know, them bringing Capella into that environment was going to kind of alter the market for John and essentially take leverage away from him internally, where it was like, hey, listen, we got another big who is superior to you on the defensive end and, you know, another guy who could be part of the program with Trae Young. So that was a four-team deal back in February of 2020. We got Capella and Nene from the Rockets, 12 players total, and the Hawks sent Evan Turner and a conditional future first to Minnesota and a 2024 second rounder to the Rockets. That's it. You know, that's...
Yeah.
That's not too shabby.
That's when Houston was just deciding they needed to go all in on Westbrook and they just couldn't have a center on the roster. Yeah. And to be honest, they kind of punted him away for not much at all.
Evan Turner and a conditional first.
Capella was like in the running for like third team All-NBA center. I mean, he's not going to get it, I don't think, just because you got Embiid, Jokic, Gobert. But he had that type of season. At this point, he's probably more important to their future than Collins. Collins is still helpful, and I'm very curious how his summer goes. But you have that, and then, you know, the Bogdanović had a rough start to this season. I think he like fractured his kneecap. He had like a weird knee injury. And then even when he came back, he was completely out of it. Apparently, from reading Chris Kirshner, our Hawks writer, and Sam, you probably know this too, the coaching change really helped him. But he has exploded. And you know, I remember at the deadline, I'm sitting there talking like Kelly Oubre, Bogdanović swaps. Now he's like kind of like the number two, exactly what Trey needs next to him, is kind of like the secondary creator. And it has created an environment that has allowed Trae Young to ascend to basically the story of that team. Right now, I won't say the story of the East because that's Brooklyn, but they're up 1-0 on Philadelphia.
He's been perfect for them because he's not just the secondary creator. He's also so good as a catch and shoot guy and can like create some stir and some commotion as an off ball guy. You know, as I'm watching the Bucks game tonight and I watched the Atlanta game yesterday, I'm like, man, imagine how different this Eastern Conference playoffs picture would be if Bogdanovich were on the Bucks right now, potentially. Like, just think about how differently this could have potentially played out. Like, I'm sitting there thinking, like, man, the Bucks could use a
especially after they lost DiVincenzo. Yeah.
Yeah. No question. Yeah, Atlanta's depth also is impressive.
Quickly, just because we can't go without a strong Kings mention. How about the Kings just losing asset for nothing?
We can. Yeah, that was a tough. I mean, I wrote it at the time. I don't know that we could do a whole pod on that thing. I mean, it's a fascinating question because their perspective on it in retrospect is that first of all, they pushed it to, you know, once the Milwaukee deal fell apart, obviously they pushed it to allow the Hawks to send that offer sheet. And as I wrote, turned down a first in a possible trade before then that would have, to be fair, it would have become 2 seconds. But folks were up in arms about why would you not, you know, just secure the assets if you knew you were going to let them walk. Their response to that would be that, you know, they wanted to see the offer sheet and they were seriously thinking about holding on to them. And they were close enough in terms of making that call that you're essentially giving up those 2 seconds for the opportunity to see the offer sheet. And then ultimately 4 years, $72 million, they decide it's too rich for their blood. But it, you know, any way you try to frame it, it's a pretty tough look to lose a guy like that when you're a bad young team and he's a good young player who
could be traded. Yeah. You know, he would have had value at the deadline on that.
Right. And it was getting a little hairy, and not to get too in the weeds on this, but like, you had Vlade Divac's exit, and he was pretty tight with Bogdan. He was the guy Vlade was who had brought him over from Serbia. And I think once Vlade left, you know, Bogdan was ready to go for the most part. So you were going to be holding on to a guy who didn't necessarily want to be there, but that's the business. I mean, you're right. You could have moved him down the line. And then, you know, every time he has a big night, it's going to look like another tough pill for the Kings to swallow.
Philadelphia side of this series, I thought, you know, Embiid played, so that's something.
I mean, the start was unbelievable. I mean, just how bad they were. I mean, kudos to them. Sorry to jump in, but like, they fought back. It seemed like a little bit of window dressing, but I mean, they cut it close, and Bogdanovich hit that late three that kept him out of harm's way for Atlanta. But I just couldn't get over the awful start.
Fred, what'd you think? I mean, you watched them dominate, really, that first round series. The only positive I took is Embiid did not look that hindered, but they...
Yeah, after watching AD just like lumber through the court, maybe my bar was set low, but I was watching that just thinking like, man, I just hope he looks better than Anthony Davis. And yeah, I'm with you. He moved well. He made a legitimately positive impact on the game. You know, I forget who it was. Somebody made the point that the Sixers look like a team that just played a cakewalk in the first round and got caught by surprise in round two. I forget.
Don't
who made
take
that
these
point.
Shots, Fred. Don't take those hometown shots.
Somebody made that point.
Are you saying Robin Lopez is a cakewalk? I mean, Robin was.
Robin Lopez killed in that series. Robin Lopez was having 16 point and 18 minute nights against Embiid. He was the method to the way of a gentleman sweep instead of just a flat out sweep when they won game four.
Let me ask you guys, are you concerned about Philly? Fred, like, do you think like Atlanta's got a very good shot at this?
I still think Philly's going to win this series. I think Philly is going to figure out a way defensively to slow down Trey to some degree. I think they have too many strong perimeter defenders. And assuming that Embiid's health gets a little bit better, it's going to be harder for Trey to create chaos inside the 3-point line when Embiid is on the floor. But yeah, I guess I'm minimally worried. You know, one thing that Atlanta has done is that no team that Atlanta has played so far, the Knicks didn't do it and Philly didn't really do it, is they haven't really tried to just crack Trae Young on defense every single time. You know, we've seen that happen in playoff series with weak link defenders. We saw it happen a little bit tonight with Phoenix picking on Michael Porter Jr. during that run in the second half that they had.
You could argue that Tom Thibodeau should have done a little more of that, Fred.
Oh,
his coach of the year.
You should argue. I'll tell you what, I wasn't voting him coach of the first round. I think you should argue that they should have done more of that. I think Doc will find ways to do it. Doc is a really good coach, and I think he'll figure out ways to do that as well. You know, Philly went on, what the hell? I don't know what the hell happened at the end of that game one. I would say I'm minimally worried. I think Atlanta is a lot just way better than we realized they were when they were however many games below 500 that they were. But I still think Philly has the talent and specifically the defensive talent to win the series.
Last Sixers thought real quick before we finish with a little Clippers Jazz discussion. Slater, 6 degrees of Warriors and Steph Curry. My favorite moment of today, at least my favorite social media moment, was I was a little slow to this, but when Daryl Morey, Sixers president, got fined $75,000 for his tweet about Steph Curry, where he put up a picture of Seth and then essentially said, join him to Steph. And I'm forgetting how he conveyed that message.
Well, so Steph had Instagrammed like Seth and, you know, like that.
Yeah,
way
that
to go, little
me.
Brother.
Yeah.
Way to go, little brother. I don't know what the caption was, but yeah. It was something about his brother having a big game. And then Daryl Morey, like, I don't know if he screenshotted the Steph Instagram post or what, but then he tweeted, like, join him.
Said, join.
And it was like,
but if you look
you
down
know, there's
the
no
thread,
more blatant.
If you look down the thread, Daryl literally says, and I'm paraphrasing, but and Daryl's always been good to me, but I'm having fun here. He just says, like, come on, everybody, that's not what I meant. And I'm just like, how else do you think? It never gets old.
It's like,
there's a reason a podcast named Tampering.
This is the tampering, but like tampering's usually like slyer behind the scenes, like very, you know,
join them.
That was so obvious that Daryl might actually be able to write off that charitable donation.
Somebody
said he might be able to argue that was an intentional charitable donation.
He might as well just have tweeted, Steph Curry, come play for the Philadelphia 76ers when your contract is up.
Somebody made a crack about how it's a good thing you're good at your job because you have a habit of costing your owners a lot of money. And there's some truth in that.
I do love the idea of tampering in these cases, though. Like, as if the NBA is looking at it and being like, damn, now that Daryl Morey sent that tweet, now Stephen Curry is way more likely to go to the 76ers. If he were trying to get him to go.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're taking a step further. Steph Curry's looking down at his phone. Join the Sixers.
Never thought about this.
I'd get to play with my brother. That would be incredible.
Wow, Daryl, good point.
Never would have gone there.
Yeah. Oh, good Lord.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started.
All right, Clippers Jazz. Let's end on this high note. I don't know if I believe in the Clippers yet. I already kind of said earlier that I don't. I'll give them a ton of props. I'm going to give Ty Lue some props. And Fred, you said earlier, you know, we have a hard time, especially in given current conditions, reporting wise, really having a grip on how coaches are impacting teams, right? So I don't really have a feel for Ty Lue with this Clippers team, but
knowing his track record, his personality, and then hearing his messaging through press conferences, it does feel like, if you have to handicap it and pick a person who has helped improve the Clippers culture when it comes to chemistry and toughness and, you know, fighting back from a 2-0 deficit against Dallas and surviving a game 7 where Luka Doncic was magical and the Clippers still got the job done. And certainly, you know, I guess ties should probably be, you know, 1A and 1B with Kawhi. Kawhi Leonard was tremendous. Paul George had a good game 7. So I give him a ton of credit. The Clippers looked dangerous again. And, you know, and I can't wait to see this Utah series because Donovan Mitchell was a man on fire in those last 4 games against Memphis. And I think it'll be fun. Last thought real quick, Tony Jones, our Jazz beat writer, I thought had a really good breakdown today talking at length about how for Rudy Gobert, you know, this is going to be a narrative defining stretch for him where, you know, what do we always hear about Rudy? You know, just switch him, get him on the perimeter, you know, and this is a perimeter heavy Clippers team that shouldn't necessarily be as afraid of a guy like Rudy as most teams would be. And so it makes for a pretty interesting matchup.
Yeah. Ty Lue he did a good job in that Dallas series. You know, we also talked about like guys who were good at not being stubborn, making quick, decisive decisions and changing their minds throughout a series. And Ty Lue has consistently done that so much throughout his career. He's a very flexible coach and he's very innovative in a lot of ways. It really shows that. I think that series is going to be fun as hell. Cause like Sam, you mentioned the Gobert versus the Clippers stuff, which is going to be really interesting. There's also the fact that Utah doesn't really give up very many threes. Like for all the talk of Utah being this rim defending team because they have Gobert, I mean, there's an outward trickle down effect on that where Utah is one of the best 3-point defensive teams in the league. And the Clippers were the best 3-point shooting team in the league this year. So there are so many contrasting matchups between those two teams that are going to be really fun to watch. I think that could be a really, really fun series. And I don't know, like, are the Clippers rolling now? I don't really know. I mean,
you went 4 out of 5 against a Dallas team with Luka going like that. I'd say they're rolling. And game 7 was pretty convincing. It wasn't
Kawhi's rolling.
Yeah.
And that, yes, know, Kawhi's rolling. The Clippers are.
And Paul's not shooting threes off the side of the backboard. I'm not even trying to be funny, but he wasn't shook, you know.
I felt like he
sorry,
kind of
a little bit.
I want to mention a player, Reggie Jackson. You know, I cover Reggie Jackson in Oklahoma City. He forced his way out to Detroit. He got that 4-year, $80 million from Stan Van Gundy. Didn't go well, right? I mean, by the end of the Detroit run, he's getting DMPs. He got cut, essentially. I mean, he's buyout candidate for any and all. I mean, I believe he's on the minimum right now with the Clippers. And, you know, what's been the Clippers' issue, you know, going back to the bubble and for much of this season and the fact that they went and got Luke Kennard? They needed a point guard who could help. I mean, Rondo, they were hoping could really help. And Kennard has really, you know, that's a bad deal they gave him. And
had a good game
and they've
seven,
been searching.
Though.
Yeah. But you know, they've been searching for a point guard who could score a little bit, set up a little bit. And Reggie Jackson just had a really good series against the Mavericks. I'm looking right now at his point totals the last 6 games, 15, 16, 15, 20, 25, 15. He's hitting, you know, 3 threes, 4, 3, 6, 3, 3. You know, he's not necessarily that full type playmaker that we're talking about. You know, it's 2 assists a game, 3 assists, 4 assists, that type of thing. But he, you know, there's a reason right now Ty Lue is playing him, you know, in that series played 30 minutes a night. And that's not where I thought Reggie Jackson's career was going.
Not at all.
I remember at the end of the Detroit run, I remember being in Chase Center, and Detroit had just lost. And I was talking to some of the Detroit beat writers, James Edwards, and Reggie behind the scenes was waiting to get cut. And there were people there who were like, I'm not sure Reggie might be in the league very soon. And right now he's their best guard. He's been better than Rondo. He's been better than Kennard. He's been better than Patrick Beverley. And Patrick Beverley has very little impact right now. And I just think that's interesting. He's really beefed up depth at a spot that the Clippers needed help. And I'm just curious how that moves forward.
No, I agree with all that. I mean, big time 3 late in game 7 as Dallas was trying to pull that thing off. Very clutch shot. And, you know, I mean, I guess guys in the same vein as me pointing out that Luka couldn't get out of the first round, you know, John Wall, Fred, is the one who didn't like Reggie's contract. And I don't know, is Reggie in a better place than John Wall these days?
You know, I have a history
on a better contract.
I have a history of covering star multi all-star point guards who don't like Reggie Jackson between John Wall and Russell Westbrook. So
it was John, right? Who publicly criticized Reggie's deal. It was John who took the
swipe at Reggie's contract, right. and it was Russell who was the starting point guard over Reggie, and Reggie did not love the fact that Russell was the starting point guard over him.
You mean when Reggie was writing SPG on his sneakers
starting to signify point guard.
Starting point guard in Russell Westbrook's locker room?
Starwood Points Program, I think.
I have a few other Reggie Jackson stories from his final days in Oklahoma.
You can't tease those for other podcasts. Get him off the pod. You can't. No fake teases. We're going to drop you right now.
That's called a preview for next week. Remind me about Reggie Jackson next week. He's about to go off in this Utah series. Right. We'll have plenty of weeks.
You think we got more runway here?
How about we end here? Let's make some picks on the Jazz.
Slater's got some writing to do. He wants to get out of here.
I do. Yes. I do.
Yeah. Oh, all right. You
know, it is what it is.
Let's do some picks. We'll work back. Are we doing series picks?
All Clippers Jazz. It's the only one left.
Okay. Good Lord.
It's a good series.
It is a good series. I don't know. I got to be consistent here and say my belief in the Clippers will remain, you know, not enough. So I'll go Utah.
I pick the Clippers to win the West before the playoffs, so I'll go sticking with it. I'll go Clippers in six.
And I picked the Clippers to win the West before the season. I picked them, I think, before the playoffs. I don't remember. I think the Jazz are going to win this series.
Wow.
I think Jazz in seven. I don't know. I mean,
no faith in Reggie Jackson.
I know. Jeez. Just went on a Reggie Jackson monologue. I did not think this is where the playoffs were going. I don't know.
And the takeaway is Reggie Jackson can't keep it up.
That was four impressive games by the Jazz against Memphis. You know, to take that punch, to take that that wave of criticism that came right with the Donovan Mitchell situation,
yep.
And then to just kind of flick Memphis away four straight games. They're deep, obviously. And I'm not sure the Clippers should have. I think we saw it late in the series. They should have beaten Dallas easier. They kind of, I don't know, people say play with your food or whatever. I just think they just still don't, besides Kawhi, don't seem to really have that kind of killer in them right now. And I don't believe them. And I think they're not going to operate with enough seriousness that the moment needs against a Utah team where if they slip up again, like if they go down 2-0 against Utah, are we still going to be sitting there? They won 4 or 5. I don't think so. So, I was disappointed. Even though they won that series, I was kind of disappointed in them in that series. I don't know if that makes sense.
That's quite a script flip right there. This was Mr. Clippers all year long.
I know. I should have just wrote it. I'm hedging my bet now at this point, right? If the Jazz beat him, like, you know.
Right. The only bigger script flip would have been if you picked the Bucks.
Yes.
That I'm feeling pretty good about.
All right, guys. Good to see your faces. Appreciate you. And we will do it again next week. Thank you, boys.